This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host today, Casey Morabito. Legend or history, you decide. But Solomon, king of ancient Israel, 961 BC to 922 BC, was a judge's judge. As the story goes, after the death of an infant, two new mothers fought over a healthy newborn, each claiming to be the baby's true mother. King Solomon decided the best way to settle the dispute was to offer to cut the baby in half, awarding equal portions to each mom. Of course, old Saul knew that the true mom would immediately offer to forfeit her child rather than see the baby harmed. That set the bar pretty high for all judges that followed, and many have surprised and surpassed our expectations. Sandra Day O'Connor was happily quite independent, but the first woman on the Supreme Court will leave her post after 24 years on October 3rd if a successor has been confirmed. In the Kelo decision, an eminent domain case, O'Connor wrote an eloquent dissenting opinion warning against government overreach in the confiscation of private property. It's been 11 years since the last opening on the court, and since the appointment is essentially for life, all Americans have a stake in getting this right. But the pick is rarely a matter of genuine merit. More often, cronyism and partisanship wins the day. At present, our Senate has a Republican majority. Our Congress has a Republican majority. Our executive branch is Republican. And 7 of our 9 Supreme Court justices were appointed by Republican presidents. And let's not forget Justice Stevens is 85 and Chief Justice Rehnquist is 81 and struggling with thyroid cancer. So it would appear we're fresh out of those checks and balances our founding fathers crafted for us. The 49% of Americans who did not vote for President Bush are asking for a little equity. Erwin Chemerinsky is a professor of law and political science at Duke University and a legal advisor for the Constitution Project. Kathy talks with Erwin Chemerinsky.
Well, there has been a nomination. How deliberate do you think this particular choice was? How calculated do you think it was?
Well, I think from President Bush's perspective, it was a brilliant choice. He could pick somebody very much a conservative in the mold of Justice Scalia and Thomas, pick somebody that the conservative base would cheer for, and yet pick somebody who would be very hard for the Democrats to rally against in a filibuster, because he hasn't put all of these views in writings that could be said to be his alone.
Also, the nomination comes when the Senate and the Congress is about to recess, and I'm pretty sure everyone in the White House knows that. Was there a strategy, do you think, in place to deflect attention from the Roe situation?
Well, President Bush needed to nominate somebody relatively quickly. President Bush's hope, as it would be for any president, that the new justice would be in place when the court starts again on Monday, October 3rd. Whether he announced Tuesday night, as opposed to today or next week, to try to get the Karl Rove story off the newspaper, only he knows. But it's certainly not unusual for politicians to try to manage the timing of the news to gain attention for their story rather than one that's unfavorable to them.
True. Besides the abortion issue, which is going to be used as a form of litmus test, there are so many issues, and I want to be educated by you on this. If a particular subject like, let's say, eminent domain comes up, the Supreme Court hears a case having to do with the issue of eminent domain, does it mean necessarily that that issue will not be back before the Supreme Court for a certain cycle?
Not at all. The Supreme Court gets thousands of requests for review each year, of which they hear about 75 cases. They take about 1% of the cases where they're asked to hear the matter. Well, of all the ones they don't hear in any given year, there's cases involving eminent domain. There's cases involving affirmative action. There's cases involving abortion. And indeed, with a new justice, likely more conservative than Sandra Day O'Connor, you know that conservative activists are going to try to get these issues back before the court. So the court entirely controls which of the cases that are brought to it will hear, and I think we can expect that the new justice will be anxious to cast his vote on these issues.
And so they could actually come up with a very different answer the second or third time at bat?
Certainly they could. Just to give you an example, in the late 1980s, the Supreme Court considered the issue of whether or not in a murder trial, the jury in deciding whether to impose the death sentence could hear about the life of the victim. Could there be a victim impact statement read? And the Supreme Court in two cases first 1987 and then 1989 said, no, that who the victim is really shouldn't matter as to how we punish the defendant. We shouldn't be punishing murder differently if the victim is Mother Teresa versus a homeless person on the street. Mm-hmm. Well, in 1991, when the composition of the court changed, the Supreme Court changed its mind. It simply overruled its decisions. And so there's nothing to stop the Supreme Court from reconsidering any area, no matter how recent the decision.
Then for a lot of us who don't just see abortion as the big picture, there is stem cell research, there is rights of detainees, there is Real ID, renewing the Patriot Act, there is capital punishment. There are all sorts of issues that can be revisited over and over again where we're worried that this is an administration that leans towards protecting corporate interests and not the little guy in the street. So where do you see Roberts falling or getting a chance to show us that he falls if he gets appointed to the court?
Everything we know about John Roberts is it is a Bush-Scalia-type conservative, not as the moderate conservatives in the mold of Sandra Day O'Connor or Anthony Kennedy, but much more the hard right. Now, the issues you mentioned, some will come to the court, say the rights of detainees. Just last week, the court that Roberts sits on, with Roberts participating, said that the Geneva Accords don't provide protection to those who are in Guantanamo. Very troubling to say that international law doesn't apply to the United States and Guantanamo. It was a 3-0 decision, three conservative Republican judges, including John Roberts. Now, stem cell research is unlikely to come before the Supreme Court. That's going to be much more a legislative issue. But on those things that do come to the court, I think we have to fear that based on everything we know, John Roberts will be quite conservative.
And back for a moment to what you were just saying, in their decision against the Geneva Accord or Convention, what do they cite as the reason why it doesn't relate to the detainees in Guantanamo?
They're saying that the Geneva Accords don't apply to those who are fighting for Al-Qaeda or for the Taliban because neither signed the Geneva Accords. I'll tell you, I think as a matter of law, that's part right and part clearly wrong. The Geneva Accords apply to any nation, whether the nation signed or didn't sign the Geneva Accords, and Afghanistan did. Doesn't matter if it's a government we recognize or don't recognize, the Geneva Accords apply. Now, it is true that the Geneva Accords would not apply to something like Al-Qaeda, but the whole point of the district court decision that Judge Roberts participated in overruling was that we need, under the Geneva Accords, to have a procedure to decide who's Taliban and who's Al-Qaeda. If they're Taliban, they're a prisoner of war. So Al-Qaeda, they're an enemy combatant, and a tremendous amount with regard to legal protections turns on that distinction.
These are things that get turned around on you later.
Well, I've been representing a Guantanamo detainee for almost 3 years now, and the people who I hear from the most who are supportive of what I'm doing are those who used to be in the military and even some who are currently in the military. And what they said to me over and over is, if the United States doesn't follow the Geneva Accords, if we don't treat enemy prisoners in accord with international law, that puts American soldiers in risk when they're captured by foreign countries. How can we ask foreign nations to follow the Geneva Accords and other protections of human rights?
Yeah, my instincts tell me that for generations to come, Americans are going to be paying for some of the mistakes we are currently involved in. So affirmative action could get revisited too then, right?
Very much. 2 years ago, the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, in a case called Grutter versus Bollinger, said that colleges and universities have a compelling interest in diversity in the school body and thus may use race as a factor to enhance diversity to benefit minorities. But it was 5-4 with Justice O'Connor writing the opinion for the court. Justice Roberts replacing her, I'd imagine the court might quickly take up the issue again and reverse itself.
Now, President Bush has 3 more years of this term. Obviously, Mr. Roberts is a young fellow. He's going to be there for some time to come. Do you see the Supreme Court tilting towards the right for a great long period to come?
I really do, and I wish it were otherwise. The reality is that John Roberts is 50 years old. If he stays on the court until he's 85, just as John Paul Stevens' current age, that'll be into the year 2040. Clarence Thomas is just in his mid-50s. I think he's 56 now. He could easily be on the court another 30 years. Imagine that William Rehnquist steps down from the court. And if he's replaced by somebody of a similar age, John Paul Stevens is 85, as I said. Imagine that he's replaced by somebody similar age. That means we could have 4 far-right conservative justices lasting until 2035 or 2040. that's the rest of my career as a lawyer and maybe the rest of my life.
Yeah, mine too. Let's say you manage to have that nomination withdrawn through a political fight here. What would the point be if the person involved in making the nominations, President George Bush, would just float another conservative person each and every time, would he not?
In 1969, President Nixon nominated a very conservative judge, Clement Haynsworth, and the Senate blocked him. President Nixon put up another very conservative judge, Harold Carswell. The Senate blocked him. They forced Nixon to pick a more moderate justice, Harry Blackmun, who in the end turned out to be a very liberal justice. Perhaps if we block Roberts, if necessary, block the next pick, we'll force President Bush to pick another Harry Blackmun.
Well, a lot of his second and third choices are from that, is it the Fifth Circuit in Louisiana?
Yes.
That's a scary bunch of people.
There are a lot of scary Federal Court of Appeals judges right now, very far-right conservatives. And I think what's so important for your listeners to understand is the enormous difference between a conservative like Senator O'Connor or Anthony Kennedy on the one hand and Anton Scalia and Clarence Thomas on the other. Justices O'Connor and Kennedy were appointed by Ronald Reagan. They certainly voted to limit affirmative action, limit abortion rights, but they were never willing to go as far in these areas as Scalia and Thomas. I fear that we've got another Scalia or Thomas, not another O'Connor or Kennedy.
And I think it was that Fifth Circuit that made the decision on a capital punishment case that the decision on this man's execution be thrown out based on the fact that his lawyer had been asleep through part of the trial. And they said that didn't discount the verdict because they weren't sure that the lawyer had been asleep during a crucial part of the trial.
You correctly state the case. It's the Burdine case. And the Fifth Circuit said the lawyer sleeping through the trial in a capital case was not ineffective counsel. I should say that the entire Fifth Circuit reversed that, but five judges, including ones who are on the Bush shortlist, voted to say sleeping through the trial didn't matter. Go ahead and execute the guy.
That is amazing. Erwin, what do you recommend to folks that might be feeling as you feel, that this guy could be a danger to the long-term future of many important decisions that will affect so many of our lives? What would you want folks to do out there? What should they be doing?
For those who care about civil liberties and civil rights, I think it's essential that they contact their senators and say that unless John Roberts shows he's different than his record indicates, it's essential that action be taken to filibuster and block him, that somebody who's not committed to basic civil rights and civil liberties is just unfit to serve on the nation's high court.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
With what has been published thus far on John Roberts, do you feel that he would be impartial enough for the highest court? Email us. Go to www.marynoll.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us. Or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Catherine Spiller and Erwin Chemerinsky are just two of the voices of our world. This week's show was produced by Kathy Golden, and I've been your host, Casey Morabito. To suggest a topic or for more information on today's guests, please go to our program's website, www.marynoll.org/voices. To get MaryKnoll magazine in English or Spanish, please call 877-MaryKnoll. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. If you missed a portion of this program, you can catch us on our website, www.marynoll.org/voices. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.